This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.
Martin Landau died on Saturday. The actor who won an Oscar for his role in Tim Burton's Ed Wood was 89. Landau was a journeyman actor whose career spanned parts of seven decades and included credits ranging from TV's Mission Impossible to Alfred Hitchcock's North by Northwest.
He only ever acted once in Milwaukee in a touring production of Paddy Chayefsky's Middle of the Night in the 1950s. But in 2009, he was an honored guest at the Milwaukee Film Festival, speaking at the Oriental Theater.
We caught up with him then at his hotel room at the Pfister, and he talked about his professional life, which began, interestingly enough, as a newspaper cartoonist.
I worked for the New York Daily News as a kid, and I was being groomed to be the theatrical caricaturist. An older man, an English fellow called Horace Knight, was retiring, and I was going to step into that job, which was a great job for a newspaper artist. I mean, I'd go to opening nights and the PR people would give me 8x10 photographs and I'd do a drawing of the cast for a Sunday paper. And if there were two openings, two. And that was my friend Bill Gallo, who does the sports cartoon, still at the news, he's 86 years, 87 now, I think, is still doing it. He's the last of the Mohicans. I mean, but we were there together back in prehistoric times. And I knew if I got that job, I'd never leave, so I quit. Much to the joy of my family. You know, you did what? So, I mean, I was pretty good at caricaturing people and stuff. But I quit because I didn't want to act, and it was totally illogical and stupid, you know, and everybody thought I was insane. I remember telling one person that I was going into the theater and he thought I got a job as an usher at the music hall. So I knew that if I told them I wanted to quit, that they would, I'd have a barrage of objections. And so I quit before I told anybody, and it was, you know, fait accompli.
When you made the shift, you went into some amazing company in the 50s with Lee Strasberg, the Actor Studio. It must have been an amazing time.
It was an amazing time. And New York in those days was an amazing place. I mean, I could actually walk across Central Park at night without looking behind me. Getting into the Actor's Studio was one thing. I had already done Summer Stock and several, you know, I did 12 shows in 13 weeks in my first Summer Stock musical, a straight play. I was singing. I came back and studied seriously with, you know, some very good teachers. But at the end of it all, the dream was to get into the studio at that point. And they didn't take a lot of people every year. I mean, the year I auditioned, 2000 auditioned, and Steve McQueen and I were the only two accepted that whole year. You know, Dustin Hoffman swears that he did 9 auditions. The truth is he did 6 auditions before he got in. Geraldine Page did 6 auditions. Gene Hackman 4 times. Bobby Duvall 3 or 4 times. I got in on my first audition.
It just makes me think about the effect that method acting has had on a generation, number of generations
of
actors.
It's changed the face of acting worldwide. It started with the group theater. And then, of course, the Royal Court Group in England, too, I mean, you know, picked up on that because there was a lot of very presentational acting done in England for a long time. And then when Tony Richardson's entire group, you know, with the Albert Finney and all of those, you know, Robert Stevens, Tom Courtenay, and Osborne's writing, you know, Osborne was basically Odets in the 30s, who was an actor with the group theater, started writing these plays, you know, Golden Boy, Rocket to the Moon. The same thing happened in England with Osborne, who was an actor with that company, and started, you know, writing the Angry Young Men plays, Look Back in Anger and Epitaph for George Dylan, and those plays, which changed the shape of English theater, too. So the group theater, the Actor's Studio, and, you know, all of which stems from initially Stanislavski and the quote-unquote method, which was Basil. He actually called it the Stanislavski system in Russia. So I'm really not a method actor, I'm a system actor.
You're part of the system.
That's right.
Well, your career, we've talked about it a little bit. You know, you've ranged from everything from stage work to television work to Oscar-winning film performances. I have to say, Ed Wood, your part as Bela Lugosi remains one of my favorite things you've ever done. I can watch it over and over and over.
I love that. And Tim, working with Tim and Johnny was just joyful.
Beautifully made film, too.
It is, and Chapsky, the cinematographer, had never shot a black and white film before that. In fact, the first tests we did were in color. And then Tim actually was going to do the movie at Columbia, and Mark Canton, who was running Columbia at the time, said no to a black and white film. So he moved it to Disney. Tim calls me and says, you know, we've got a start date and this and that. I'm going to have to put the film off a month, because we're going to Disney with it, because they'll let me do what I want. Are you still on board? I said, of course, you know, but, it, you know, we started a month later because of that. And I'd never met Tim before, nor Johnny before, and we got along wonderfully. And actually, I mean, Tim, it was sort of crazy how that happened, because I'd seen Beetlejuice and, you know, Edward Scissorhands, and I remember saying to my daughter, because I took her to see Beetlejuice, after we left, I said, yeah, I'd like to work with that guy. I said, who the hell makes a movie like this? He's got a nut, but I like nuts. And several years went by, and then one day I get a call, and a guy on the phone says, oh, this is Tim Burton. I said, this is Thomas Jefferson. You know, I mean, I think, I mean, you know, I figured someone, one of my friends was futzing around. And he said, I'm sending a script, check it out and get back to me. Here's my number at the studio and here's my number at home. I said, sure, Tim, you know, very cavalier. You know, I mean, usually it's an agent or an assistant or somebody's calling, but bingo, a guy gets on the phone and says, I'm Tim Burton. Well, sure enough, a script came, and then I read it, and I said, this is wonderfully nuts. And so I called a studio, and I said, well, Mr. Burton has gone home. I said, oh, okay. And then I call his home, and he picks up the phone. He says, what do you think? I said, I love it. He said, well, come in tomorrow. We'll talk about it. And I went in, and he said something very peculiar. He said, I'm supposed to do this picture with Julia Roberts, but I got this script, and Johnny and I talked about it, and if you do this movie, we'll do this movie and not the other movie. He said, I want you to play Bela Lugosi. I said, okay. And he said, and if you don't want to do it, then I'll do the other movie. We won't do this movie. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I don't know anyone else who can do it. And I said, I remember saying, there's 100,000 actors in SAG. What are you talking about? He said, I don't know anyone else who can do it. I said, I'm not sure I can do it. I said, you've written a 74-year-old Hungarian morphine addict alcoholic who has mood swings, which would be interesting and hard enough, but he has to be Bela Lugosi? Give me a break and go into any video store. You know, 20 years ago, maybe it would, you know, you have to stay up till 2 in the morning to one of those channels to see a horror film. But now you can go into any video store and pick up, you know, horror section, Lugosi, Lugosi, Lugosi. Anyway, we did a series of tests, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we won't go through all of that. But then we did the movie, and he didn't do the other movie.
And I'm very pleased that he didn't.
Well, I'm more than pleased.
Yeah.
Because I had no chance of being in that Julia Roberts movie. You know, unless I played a never mind.
Yeah, something that you probably didn't want to play.
Well, no, there was no part in it for me. And in fact, it was almost all English, with the exception of Julia Roberts. All of those people talked like this. Upper class, you know.
You do that quite well.
Well, it's all right. You know, I talk all kinds of stuff like this. I do.
Do you do imitations,
too?
Well, that's
no,
great.
I just, you know. I mean, all the, you know, I come from New York, and all the Irish guys I go up would talk like this. Hey, Marty, there's a dance over here. And the Italian guys talk different. Hey, well, you come here, I want to ask you something. Stay the heck out of this, huh? Behave yourself. Otherwise, you know, hey, we don't want to hurt you. What are you laughing?
How about the Jewish guys?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I knew those guys. I mean, there are a lot of Jewish guys, a lot of You look at my graduation picture from elementary school, it looks like the United Nations. I mean, literally, I mean, it's astonishing.
How has Hollywood changed for actors with all of this advent of technology?
Well, I mean, a character-driven script is still a character-driven script. And it's, you know, it's harder and harder to make a character-driven movie because of opening weekends and box office and the, you know, unless it has a lot of fireballs and a guy climbing and hanging off the side of a building or car chases and costs $200 million and opens to $60 million, it's harder and harder to get those studios to make those small movies. Around Oscar time, there's a handful of them that manage to get nominated, but for every one of those, I mean, you know, so many of them slip through the cracks that are really good films because they're not picked up and they're not distributed because they're not interested. They're just, you know, the guys who are running the show these days are guys who are lawyers, agents, you know, guys who come a different way. They're not literate in the sense of the longest thing they've read is a deal memorandum contract. They probably haven't read that, you know. No one reads anything anymore, you know, and scripts are about, you know, what's on the page and how you take it and liven it, you know. Novels are very different than scripts, you know, they're very descriptive. Scripts are basically all some description, a little bit, and then what people say. And terrible scripts are written all the time. I mean, you know, people always say, you know, I mean, what a character says to another character is what he's wishing to reveal or share with another character. Then the 90% he isn't willing to is what I do for a living. I mean, you know, people don't walk into a room and say, hello, everybody, what a wonderful party. I'm totally embarrassed because I don't know anybody here, you know. I mean, that's bad writing, and that's what you'll see, in essence, in a lot of films these days.
Do you still get nervous when films screen?
Less and less over the years. I've gotten used to that guy up there, and an ever-changing guy up there. Who's that old fart? That's me. Holy God. What happened to that dark-haired guy who jumped around? You know, it's when you pass a store window and you know, oh, God. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot of glass around. I see, oh, that's me. Anyway, no, but it's, you know, the wonderful thing about, you know, I mean, I'm in a line of work that allows me to keep going, you know. I mean, think about it. If I was a ballet dancer, I'd be watching a lot of ballets. And if I was an opera singer, I'd be listening to a lot of CDs. But I'm an actor, and I'm able to still act. And as I've gotten older, I'm playing older and older and older characters. And recently, I was called in by a director who remained nameless, and we talked, and she said, you know, I really want a 90-year-old actor for this. She said, I know you can do that. I said, well, then you called me in to tell me I'm wrong for the part. I said, why? She said, well, I just want you to know that I really like your work. And if I can't find a 90-year-old, you'll play the part. I said, you're basically calling me in to tell me I'm not going to get the part, that I'm not right. She said, well, I don't know how many 90-year-old actors. I said, you know, it's hard for me to play younger, but I could play older. I mean, I can get very old, very quickly, very old. Watch this. Anyway, so.
I wish our audience could see what you did with your body when you did that.
Radio, I grew up on radio, and the pictures that I drew in my head are probably why I'm here today, because radio was wonderful in that you had to cast it. You know, when I met Les Tremaine, and when I did North by Northwest, he was doing all these leading men on radio, and he was, and I looked at him, I said, this was the hero I grew up with. I had a whole other picture of a guy. Les Tremaine didn't look like any of the characters he played. When Jack Armstrong went into the elephant's graveyard and saw all that ivory, I saw, you know, that would have been a $2 million production just getting those elephant bones in that one space. No, but I mean, all in my head. So, I mean, part of wanting to be an actor, I think, was encouraged by radio. In that you really, when Orson Welles played The Shadow, I mean, it wasn't Orson Welles, it was Lamont Cranston, who had the ability to be invisible. And radio insisted that he be invisible, but I made him my guy and my invisible guy. And that, you know, every kid on the block had a different picture. And it was your personal picture. So you were busy visually creating movies in your head, which is, I think, helpful in an odd way to filmmaking. Sometimes you see something and it's so flat, you know, it doesn't interest you. But if you describe something on radio, that is the tallest structure man has ever made. Wow, what is it? A tower? That kind of, you know, you suddenly become an architect and build a building that is unusual and it's yours. And I think that's a very rich thing. You know, otherwise you see some terrible film, you know, with blood splattering on the walls. And you don't want to see it, you know. It's better to hear, oh, ah, God, oh, oh, ah. You make your own fight.
They're going to think I beat you up.
It's all right. Take your hand away. Stop that.
Well, Martin Landau, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bonnie.
We spoke with actor Martin Landau in 2009 when he was in town as a featured guest of the Milwaukee Film Festival. The Academy Award winner died this past Saturday. He was 89. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.